Good morning. Takes a second to get my microphone adjusted so everybody can hear me. So hopefully everybody can hear me. This morning we're going to be talking about the edge of a moral abyss. And an abyss is a deep or seemingly bottomless chasm. And as our country goes, we're getting closer and closer into stepping off into that abyss. And if we do, we're just not going to find the bottom until we reach some kind of a hell on earth. And one of the issues that continues to divide us is abortion and divides the country. And David tells us that he was fearfully and wonderfully made. I'm not sure how well you can see that, but we can actually see what David could not see. This is a picture taken from a video of an ultrasound. It's a father talking to his baby girl. And you can see this video on the internet if you want to when you get home. But this baby is at 32 weeks. And whenever he talks to her and she hears his voice, she smiles. You can see her smiling at the sound of the father's voice. And as these things are brought home, you know, our oldest girl, Sarah, she told us recently that she's expecting. And she's going to tell us this afternoon whether it's a boy or a girl. We don't know yet. She knows. We don't know. And I told her, I don't want you to tell me over the phone. And you tell me, I want to be face-to-face. I want to give you a hug, whatever you tell me. Whether it's a boy or a girl, just... And, of course, Jeremy's expecting, too. But we also have Sheree's nephew's wife, Mandy. She's in the hospital today, and they're monitoring her health and the baby's health. And her baby is at this exact same age, 32 weeks. And they're trying to keep her from delivering. They want to get another week or so. I think they're going to have the delivery this Friday if she can make it that far. And so, but in several states in this country, now that we've turned this back over to the states, several states have said it's okay to abort babies this age. Babies that you can see their face, they're fully formed. They're healthy babies. But it's okay to abort them. And I was looking, you know, not only is our society, our churches, our government, they're just way off on this abortion issue. And I was looking at the internet the other day, and I saw this woman. She's a pastor, supposedly, a social justice warrior, a feminist, an ethicist, a professor, an author of a book called Trust Women, A Progressive Christian Argument for Reproductive Justice. And you know, when you get into all that reproductive justice stuff, that it's going to be pretty liberal. And she's been recognized, she's gotten awards, because that's one thing Satan does. He has his followers give his other followers awards. It gives them the aura of legitimacy. You know, we see all these evil people, they get Grammys, they get Oscars, they get Pulitzer Prizes. And I'm sure that we'll see some of these same names on the list of those that attended, Sean P. Diddy Combs' parties. Because they all attend these parties, and they all give each other awards for being such great people. But one of the things she said was, if Jesus were alive today, he would be a clinic escort distracting women from the hatred of the protesters, or an abortion doula. I had to look that up. I didn't know what the word doula meant. They're supposed to be someone, typically without formal obstetric training, who's employed to provide guidance and support to a pregnant woman during delivery, from admission through delivery. Someone who's helping you to deliver a healthy baby, not helping you to kill them. But that's how the far left twists the meaning of words. So according to her, if Jesus was here, he would be an abortion doula holding women's hands and offering support and love as they end their pregnancies. And she also said if Jesus were giving his Sermon on the Mount today, he might also have said, blessed are those who end pregnancies, for they will be known for their loving kindness. She went on to say that she's had two abortions, and that God was with her and blessed her. And she also has two amazing children. And each of those reproductive decisions to have or not to have children were sacred decisions because they reflect the moral responsibility of reproductive power that is part of our inheritance as human creatures. And then they use that other word they love to use, reimagining. Reimagining our theological understanding of abortion is essential to addressing the violence that is being done to people across the country in the name of Christianity. So you know, whenever you hear that term reimagining, it's not what follows is not going to be good. So let's look at Daniel 6 for a moment. You may say, well, Daniel 6 is an odd place to go when you're talking about abortion. But in Daniel 6, we see that Darius set over the kingdom 120 princes. And then Daniel was preferred among the presidents and princes because of an spirit that was in him. And the king fought to set him over the whole realm. So Darius was going to put Daniel over everybody else. Well, that makes everybody else jealous. They don't want that. They want to be in charge. So they say, we shall not find any occasion against this Daniel, except we find it against him concerning the law of his God. And so they went, and they saw that he prayed. So they went to use that against him. And the king signed a decree that nobody else could ask anything of anybody but him. And here's the key part. And then it says, when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he went into his house, and his windows being open in his chamber towards Jerusalem, he kneeled upon his knee three times a day and prayed and gave thanks before his God as he did aforetime. So that Daniel continued to do what Daniel had always done. Well, that got him in trouble. He was thrown in the lion's den. Of course, we know God protected him. So why are we talking about Daniel praying? Well, that's how far this abortion censorship has gone. Even in England, there's a broad censorship order, and it's enabled by the Antisocial Behavior Crime and Policing Act. So if you are close to an abortion clinic, they now bar individuals from engaging in prayer, sprinkling holy water on the ground and crossing themselves. Practicing your Christianity in public now in England is antisocial behavior. They even convicted a man of criminal charges for praying near an abortion clinic. He didn't do anything. He didn't talk to anybody. He didn't harass anybody. He didn't interact in any way with anybody. He wasn't even in sight of the abortion clinic. You couldn't see him from the abortion clinic. But he was put on probation and fined $11,709. The court reasoned that his prayer amounted to disapproval of abortion because at one point his head was seen slightly bowed and his hands were clasped. He was capable of being seen, he was engaged in prayer, and it would have been perceptible to an observer. He said he would not be looking at anyone, so he could not breach their privacy. But the judge found his presence and the circumstances could cause detrimental impact. So just like Daniel, not doing anything but praying, not bothering anybody, this man is charged with a crime for praying in public. We're doing the same thing in America. We've had several people arrested recently for praying outside abortion clinics. And one of the attorneys for the federal government said, because they violated a federal law, that these defendants knowingly chose to violate laws they disagreed with. The jury's verdict today is a victory for the rule of law in this country and a reminder that we cannot pick and choose which laws we follow. It is good to know that all laws are enforced equally. And we know all laws are not enforced equally. Scotland has the same thing, but they've gone a step further. They've established a 200-meter area around the abortion clinic. And they've sent a letter that if you have these activities in a private place, such as a house within the area between the protected premises and the boundary of a zone, could be an offense if they can be seen or heard within the zone and are done intentionally or recklessly. So if your house happens to be in this 200-meter zone and you're in your house praying and somebody sees you, you can now be charged with a crime. So, you know, what are we going to do? Are we going to do like Daniel did? and continue to pray anyway, or are we going to stop? Because Satan fears prayers, and he's going to do everything he can to stop it. You know, this week, we had there was a rally, and while the person was speaking, someone in the crowd yelled, "Jesus is Lord." And the candidate did not respond, "Yes, he is," which would have been a logical response to that. The response was, "You guys are at the wrong rally." Have we ever heard that before in a rally in America? If they didn't, they could have ignored the comment. They could have responded positively. No, you guys are at the wrong rally. How many Christians are at the wrong rally? All right, let's look at transgenderism for a moment. And just like during the pandemic, Satan continues to suppress the truth in the medical community. London has the largest experimental mutilation clinic in the world, but they're finally beginning to wake up. And they're seeing that these pediatric gender clinics, this one is being shut down due to poor evidence, risk of harm, and operational failures. They no longer can guarantee that this affirmative care model is working. So they're going to close it because it's not a safe or viable long-term option, because its interventions are based on poor evidence, and its model of care leaves young people at considerable risk of poor mental health. So we had this push, and this push came in Europe before it came in America. But they're beginning to wake up, but America's not listening. So, we get this guy, and this guy, because America won't listen to what they've already found out in Europe. When they take these puberty blockers, it says there's a belated recognition of the poor state of knowledge around endocrinological interventions for gender distress, often called puberty blockers. There's no way of knowing whether than buying time to make a decision, puberty blockers may disrupt that decision-making process and disrupt brain development, which could have significant impact on the ability to make complex, risk-laden decisions, as well as possible longer-term neuropsychological consequences. So all these things that we've rushed into that make it very difficult to change, once they've done it, it's hard to go back. And the reason why to these long-term consequences, because a man's going to always be a man, and a woman's going to always be a woman. And even after they go through these transitions, they're still not a man or a woman. If they were, you would just call them a man or a woman. Why call them trans men, trans women? Because they're not men, they're not women. They're something different. But our government's demonic and continues to encourage them to believe they can change from a man to a woman or a woman to a man. And everything is getting politicized, everything. You can trust the scientists, but you just can't trust this. You can trust the science, but you just can't trust the scientist. And what they did in Europe is they started taking people that they decided were otherwise mentally healthy, which I think is kind of a dubious statement. If you're a man and you think you're a woman, then I don't believe you are mentally healthy. But they had no other problems, apparently. And so they were comparing notes between these various countries. And when Finland started doing it, they expected a small number of boys who had persistently declared that they were girls. Instead, they got 90% of their patients were girls, mainly 15 to 17 years old. And these men that they started out with were considered to be high-functioning. But the vast majority of these girls had severe psychiatric conditions. Some came from families with multiple psychosocial problems. Most of them had challenging early childhoods, development difficulties, extreme temper tantrums, social isolation. It was common for them to have been bullied, but not for their gender. They were lonely and withdrawn. They were no longer in school. They were spending all their time in their room. They had depression and anxiety. Some had eating disorders. Many engaged in self-harm. And a few had experienced psychotic episodes. And here's the main thing. Many of them were on the autism spectrum. And it said remarkably few had expressed any gender dysphoria until their sudden announcement of it in adolescence. Now, they were coming to us because their parents, usually just mothers, had been told by someone in an LGBT organization that gender identity was their child's real problem, or the child had seen something online about the benefits of transition. Ladies, did y'all catch that? Let's see, I think I've got it right here. Let's say that right again. Now they were coming to us because their parents, usually just mothers. Ladies, we gotta spread the word. You can't let these women fall for this stuff. Your mothers have got to protect your daughters. And I think this goes to a long way to explain why the government won't release the Nashville Covenant School Shooters manifesto, because she's got a lot of other mental illnesses. And it's going to show that there's a lot of other problems, a lot of other mental issues among these trans people. Okay, men, y'all want to read it again too. Now they were coming to us because their parents are usually just mothers. So what's missing? Men, fathers. Fathers, where are we? You know, on the plus side, most of the people I see fighting against this on TV are women. And I think that's because Satan has neutralized the men. We have fallen into that myth of toxic masculinity.
Can't listen to the men.
They're misogynistic, homophobic, transphobic, Neanderthals. Satan is always so far ahead of us. And he explains why Jesus said in Matthew 10:16, "Behold, I send you forth as sheep in the midst of wolves. Be ye therefore wise as serpents and harmless as doves." We've got to get ahead of this stuff. We're always behind. Always behind. The devil just seems like he's always ahead of us. And so what happens to our parents that do fight it? In Maryland, you know, and they came and took this couple, they came and took their child, their son, and removed him from the home. And then they demanded that the parents treat him as a girl. And then they wanted them to initiate sex change interventions. And they wanted them to convert to the new Christianity by engaging in faith conversion sessions with the hospital's non-binary transgender chaplain, Lavender Kelly. So if you don't affirm that your child is transsexual, they're going to take your child and they're going to transition them anyway. And they also asked them to stop reading certain passages of the Bible that affirm traditional sexual values and gender. So if you don't buy in, you're going to get re-educated. You're going to go to re-education camps, and they're going to tell you this is how it is, this is the new reality. And you can only guess what the parents' diagnosis they received just weeks before the state took their child. He's autistic. So it seems like there's something happening there with autism, some spectrum of autism, and what's going on with these kids. So what are we going to do about it? You know, we're going off this cliff. We're going into this hole. It's a bottomless hole because man's imagination knows no boundary. I mean, when God destroyed the world with a flood because man's thoughts were continually evil. And so, you know, some of us think, well, you know, this is just the end of the world. You know, this is God's plan. This is the final spiritual battle, and there's just not anything we can do about it. We just got to sit back and go through this till the world ends, and then God wins in the end, and it's over. We don't know when the world's going to end. You know, I'm sure when Hitler and his allies were waging war across the world, that most of the world thought the end of the world was upon us. Everybody thinks the end of the world's upon them when they're alive. Some people go to Acts 17, and it says, "God that made the world and all things therein, seeing that he is Lord of heaven and earth, dwelleth not in temples made with hands, neither is worshipped with man's hands as though he needed anything, seeing he giveth all life and breath and all things, and hath made of one blood all nations of men for to dwell all the face of the earth, and hath determined the times before appointed and the bounds of their habitation." So God's in control, and he is. And he determines these boundaries, and he sets them. But most time we stop reading there,
the rest of that
27 says the reason God sets these boundaries is that they should seek the Lord, if happy they might feel after him and find him, though he be not far from every one of us. So God intends for people to learn about him through the nations that he establishes. We need to be preaching the gospel, but we also need to be involved in government. You know, we're told there's a wall of separation between church and state. Well, I don't have time to go into that right now, but if there is a wall of separation between church and state, there's a door, and the handle is on the church's side. The state can't come across and tell us what to do, but we as individual Christians, we can tell the state what to do. We can look at Joseph. What did Joseph do? God sent Joseph down, and he went through, you know, his period of trouble, his period of enslavement, imprisonment. It says that God sent him there and made him a father to Pharaoh and lord of all his house and ruler through all the land of Egypt. Why was that? So that he could save the Jews when they came during the famine. What about Gibson and Moses? Now, they didn't want to lead either.
They didn't want to get involved.
You know, God can take care of things, but he needed Gideon and Moses to do their part. You know, Gideon didn't win the battle. God won the battle. But he needed Gideon to blow those trumpets and break those jars, and then God struck fear into the hearts of the Midianites. And then they killed each other. And God needed Moses to deliver that ultimatum, to let my people go, and then he struck the Egyptians with plagues. And you know, if they hadn't done it, God would have found somebody else. We have the story of Esther. She's approaching the king without being summoned, and this could result in her immediate execution. So what if Esther had said, you know, I have all I need. The king takes care of me. He provides all this wonderful food. And have you seen my closet? All the clothes I have, everything I have, the servants I have waiting on me, the latest styles, the best health care. I have everything anybody could want. All the women want to be me. Well, maybe we could state it in today's terms. Well, you know, the government gives me welfare, health care, Social Security, and the government may even just pay off my student loans. But Mordecai told Esther, you're here for a reason, and if you don't do it, God will find another way. We could be like the Pharisees. You know, they believed, but they were afraid of being kicked out of the synagogue. So I looked up a little bit, you know, what does being kicked out of the synagogue mean? And the sources I read said it could be anything from 30 days to a permanent ban. You were shunned, you weren't allowed to be within 4 cubic feet of another Jew, not even your family. And 4 cubits is about 6 feet. So I'm kind of thinking that's where the COVID social distancing guidelines came from. And it could include the Jews not even being able to say anything. But many of us don't stand up for the truth because we're worried about being unfriended or about being made fun of or lose our jobs because we don't want to accept the indoctrination at work. So we've got to make up our minds, you know, are we going to be, who are we going to be? I'm going to read this little story I found. It says, a storm descends on a small town, and the downpour soon turns into a flood. As the waters rise, the local preacher kneels in prayer on the church porch surrounded by water. And by and by, one of the townsfolk comes up the street in a canoe. Better get in, preacher. The waters are rising fast. No, says the preacher, I have faith in the Lord. He will save me. Still the waters rise. Now the preacher's up on the balcony, wringing his hands in supplication. Another guy zips up in a motorboat. Come on, preacher, we need to get you out of here. The levee's going to break any minute. Once again, the preacher is unmoved. I shall remain. The Lord will see me through. After a while, the levee breaks, and the flood rushes over the church until only the steeple remains above water. The preacher's up there clinging to the cross when a helicopter descends out of the clouds, and a state trooper calls down to him through a megaphone. Grab the ladder, preacher. This is your last chance. Once again, the preacher insists the Lord will deliver him. And predictably, he drowns. Being a pious man, the preacher goes to heaven. After a while, he gets an interview with God, and he asks the Almighty, Lord, I had unwavering faith in you. Why didn't you deliver me from that flood? God shakes his head. What else did you want from me? I sent you 2 boats and a helicopter. When we ask God why he didn't save us from the persecution and destruction that's already here and it's just going to get worse, God's going to tell us the same thing. I gave you the Bible. I gave you the Bill of Rights. I gave you freedom of speech. I gave you freedom of assembly. I gave you the freedom of religion to worship me so that you would have the freedom to preach the gospel. I gave you the right to vote and pick good leaders to help preserve those freedoms. What else did you want from me? So we have all the tools that we need. We just have to have the courage to use them. Are we like Daniel, Joseph, Gideon, Moses, Esther, and Jesus, who had the faith and courage to die for our sins? Or are we like the Pharisees, who are afraid to confess Christ openly? We have to make a choice. We have to make a decision. And we don't have much time left. This country is falling into a hole, a dark, deep abyss. And if we fall into it, we probably will not get out of it. So I would encourage you to make a decision. Make a decision today as we stand and sing.
What can wash away my sin? Nothing but the blood of Jesus. What can make me